I listened. So please do the same. So this is the Portland City Council, Commissioner Stan, and you're the most senior member here. You have been involved in more debates and understand protocol at least as well as I do, if not better. You had a special obligation along with Auditor Blackmer to make sure we understood what we were voting on last week, and we didn't. And I'm just responding to your issue of transparency and process. Second, the mayor pointed out that the $200,000 that is in the current ordinance that the council adopted for voter-owned elections was intended to be the $200,000 to be spent after one successfully enters a runoff from a primary and goes into a general election, which is some 5 months later. The important dates here are not the difference between May 20th, when this primary is, and July 15th, when the runoff is. It's when the ballots go out. And the ballots go out for the July 15th runoff, if there is a runoff, on June 27th. That's five weeks after the primary, after a candidate received $150,000 to contact the voters. Then within that compressed 5 weeks, that candidate receives $200,000 to contact voters, $200,000 for a 5 week period. I will tell you if a privately funded candidate finds him or herself in the position where their opponent has been handed a check for $200,000, they will do nothing. They can do nothing but sit on a phone from 7 a.m. till 11 p.m. at night for that entire 5 week period in an attempt to try to raise the same amount of money to compete. What you have ensured with what I will call was passed here last week in the manner that I described, what you have ensured is just exactly the opposite of what I thought this program was supposed to do. You have ensured a competition to make these races amongst the most expensive races there are. I got elected five and a half years ago in a special election. In this same time period, I spent the same amount of money, $200,000, as did my opponent, to win this seat. I spent from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. raising that amount of money. I did not have time to go out and meet with voters. I did not have time to do the things that this voter-owned election candidate will be able to do because he's already got the $200,000. And second, it's interesting to me, while you have a concern that we've pegged a very low amount, it's interesting to me that what the proponents have done is pegged the most expensive race in the history of the city of Portland in a runoff, my race, as the amount that the voter-owned election candidate gets. It is patently unfair. So in my view, one of the goals of this system, and one of the reasons I have worked so hard, although I didn't support it initially, but I've worked hard, and I hope you would concede that I've worked hard to improve it, and I've tried to defend it even when unfair attacks came against it, which, by the way, are becoming increasingly difficult to do. What I have tried to do is make it a fair system that creates a level playing field. What this does is put a privately funded candidate in a position where they are in such a distinct disadvantage, I don't see how they compete. And the proposal that the mayor and I have talked about, which, by the way, did not happen over the weekend, I've actually never talked to Austin Raglione about this. I've only talked to Tom Potter about it. I wrote him an email over the weekend, which he answered Monday morning. He and I never talked about anything over the weekend, nor did anybody else, nor did my staff, nor anyone else. What we decided would be fair and objective was the formula you see in front of you. You take the amount of days between the May 20th primary that is coming up and the November general election, which I believe is November 4th, and you divide the $200,000 by those number of days. When you use that calculation and use July 15th as the runoff date, you get $66,666 that the voter-owned election candidate would get. But there's another important aspect of what we're proposing to do. If the privately funded candidate raises more than that, not only does the voter-owned candidate get dollar for dollar of that increase, the voter-owned candidate gets up to $300,000 if the privately funded candidate raises that much money. That's more than what the current system allows.
It's not what your ordinance says.
I believe that.
But if that's your intention, I think that can be addressed. But what your ordinance says is that it would match the amount they get, which is what the ordinance says is they get double the amount they get, which would be double 66. You meant to say they would get up to the amount they would get in a regular election. I mean,
yes.
I mean the thing is,
it is. That's the intent.
I mean, you're just working this thing on the fly, and I mean, I think.
Well, excuse me. We're responding to something that happened on the fly. We're responding to something that, frankly, got snuck through here without proper airing and discussion. And so, yeah, of course, we're trying to fix something.
All I'm calling for today, and I think I'll speak to the mayor, is proper airing and discussion. You want to vote this through today. I think this needs some airing and discussion, as this conversation is showing. I think people need to debate it and talk about it. That's the whole point. You make as your argument that it's unfair that publicly funded candidates don't have to call for dollars. That's what the voters are buying with public funds. They're buying the candidates' time, all of these things. That's the deal.
But you shouldn't be able to buy an election. You should be able to buy time to talk to voters, but you shouldn't be able to buy an election. What this does is allow a voter-owned candidate to buy the election commission.
Well, and so, and I guess
what is your idea for a forum?
I guess, Randy, I want to ask you one question. I'm just curious. I mean, let's say it was fully my responsibility to brief you guys on.
I don't think it was.
Well, but I mean, let's just say it was on what treat July 15th special runoff election as general election. For purposes means. I think in common sense parlance, that means that the rules that would apply if it was a general election apply here. And the whole system that was put in place. I don't think there's anything duplicitous about this. I don't think it was snuck through. I think it's very unfortunate that that happened in the way that you say. But the phrase, treat the special runoff as the general election, would imply to anybody with common sense that means that whatever the rules are in the general election, those are the rules. So was your assumption that there was no money in the, I mean, I don't, what would
no,
you
No, Commissioner, I thought we were going to discuss it, and I read that, and I didn't read it. I'm just saying you can criticize my reasoning or the rest of the council.
No, I'm just
I didn't read that into it.
And I'm trying to understand, did you assume that there would be no money given after for the general?
Here's what I'm saying. You or Commissioner Blackmer or any of the proponents should have sat up here and said, just so you understand, council, you have a lot of resolutions you read. You have a lot of ordinances you read. You guys run bureaus. Just so you didn't miss this point, this means that in the special election, the candidate would get $200,000.
I understand your desire for me to staff you. I get that. But what I'm asking is...
I'm talking about being transparent.
What I'm asking is, when you voted for this, did you assume they would get no money, some money, or just the same money and you didn't remember what it was? What was your assumption? This is all about what you thought in your mind.
What I thought in my mind is that the amount that they got would be determined at some future point. This is not a subject area that I'm all consumed with. This is not a subject area I spend all of my time on. I have those areas that I spend a lot of time on, but frankly, what we depend on here, Commissioner Sen, is respect between one another, that I make sure you understand what you're voting on. If I suspect that you're having some concern, you might have some concern with it, it isn't to try to hide it and sneak it through. It's to make sure you understand. That's called trust and collegiality.
Okay, so if what you expected, which I think might have been a reasonable guess, it has nothing to do with what the ordinance said, and if the point is respect and collegiality, and I'll let go of the idea that nobody, that only people who endorse the guy who benefits from the most worked on this, and nobody called me to talk about it, but yet it was my responsibility to fix it last week. Nobody called me, nobody emailed me, nobody told me you were going to send this forward. But I disrespected you. Then I think we should go back to what you just said. Your original expectation was, and say there's a process to decide how much.
I agree.
What this council should not do is over the weekend come up with a number that there's an argument for, but not one that the Citizen Commission agrees with, which is who we appointed to deal with this stuff. One at which there's a great logical argument against and one for. There should be a process for that to be debated and discussed and decided. That's all I'm saying. I think that if you had no idea that treat the special runoff election as general election meant exactly that, then it's absolutely fair to reconsider this.
Agreed.
And I think your argument that $200,000 is probably too much for this situation, I don't even have a problem with. What I don't like is getting up Monday morning and finding that there's going to be a vote today to change it to 66 based on what?
I agree with you, Mr. Stanton, but I don't like getting up Friday morning learning that a fast one was pulled.
Okay, so I'm going to...
That bothered me, too.
I would like to, Mayor, ask the auditor some questions, if that's all right. It seems like there's agreement on council that some sort of additional process beyond this particular council session makes sense. Is that agreed?
Yes, I actually agree with
so
Mr.
So is it possible between now and a very... close in future date that we could have the campaign the Elections Commission weigh in on this issue. And parenthetically, I don't have a copy of it. My understanding is that a letter was provided to us. And so parenthetically, I need to express a concern about this group making recommendations on and advice without convening as a group and without taking public testimony on the issue to hear both sides. I have a concern that that violates open meetings laws, since this is a council-created commission. And as one person on the council, I would like them to stop that practice. So, having said that, would they be willing to get together and get back to us with a recommendation after they hear all sides of the argument?
Well, we don't have anyone from the commission here. Excuse me. They actually met Monday night, and it was too late to put out a revised agenda with that topic on it.
Right.
And in fact, they left with the notion that they felt like the spirit of what they had recommended earlier still held. And they also agreed that they could work on it if there were a longer timeline, meaning that my understanding on Monday was that the council could vote for the exception today and perhaps vote for something else next week or at some future date, and they would try to get something. I don't know if they can get it by next week, but depending on what you're asking them, they could certainly make a hard effort to give you something.
We have a letter. We received a letter from the chair of that commission.
Mm-hmm.
Ardently, stridently defending the $200,000.
The
decision has been made, as far as I'm concerned. And what we find ourselves here in Otter Blackmer, and I hope you know how much I respect your work and you as a person. But frankly, on this issue, the strongest proponents have become blind, I fear, to the inequities of what's happening. And when I read that letter, I thought, you know, instead of having a balanced discussion about what's fair, we now have people who are proponents of this system, who have power over the system, defending decisions that were made rather than being balanced and listening to concerns on both sides. And I fear that what we're going to get into is having a recommendation to us that just reinforces the $200,000 decision was made that is just patently unfair. I like Commissioner Sten's idea. I'm not suggesting that today that we vote on. I hear you, and I don't want to do exactly what it was I felt like happened to us. And I don't mind having further discussion. And I'm sure the mayor feels the same way. But what I don't want to do is pretend like there's some fair, impartial process, because there's not, to decide what that is. I think we have to discuss that.
Well, I think there's a fairer and more impartial process. I mean, there are a number of people on this council who have made endorsements, or key staff people have made endorsements. I have not made an endorsement in this race. Neither has Dan.
Neither have I.
And neither has the mayor. So do you have a suggestion if the commission isn't it?
Well, no, I think, you know, I'm concerned when you have a point of view that's different than an appointed body, that then you call into question the appointed body's objectivity.
They wrote a letter, Commissioner.
Could I respond a little more?
I read the letter. And what the letter said is, what we recommended to you in January, which you accepted, is that we not make any changes and treat this like a regular election, study it, and then do the special election process later. What you're saying to that agreement, which you agreed to, and I don't think we can.
I did not agree to that.
Well, that was what you're arguing. It's no changes. But let me just keep going here.
No, wait. The no change. You changed the process last Wednesday. That's been a spin that's been coming out for the last week.
I want to respond to it. Every time you do the you, voted 5-0, and I had no.
I'm doing another
conversation with Guy Backmer about how to handle a special election. I have specifically, and I want the council to respect this, and carefully remove myself from any discussions of this. It's my seat, and my chief of staff is running. And you keep doing the you. The council voted 5-0 to make those changes, which I had nothing to do with drafting, because I'm very careful and think it's inappropriate.
Right, I agree.
So your argument is I didn't explain it to you.
Exactly.
I asked the auditor a question, and I'm going to get an answer or die trying. I am concerned, as has been shared up here, normally, I would have no problem sending this back to the Elections Commission and saying, you know, I'm going to really give a lot of weight to your recommendation. But again, I'm concerned about the decision-making process for this issue. Can you give us your thoughts?
Let me see if I can defend the Citizen Campaign Commission. I'll let my reputation.
Gary, just to be, I'm sorry I got interrupted. And Brandy and I are having too much fun here. But let me just say what my point was that I got distracted from, and I apologize, which is that I think, whether you did or not, Commissioner Leonard, there was a general consensus reached by the Citizens Commission, which the council at least implicitly signed off on, not to try and write special election rules this special election. That was the consensus. I think that's what their argument is saying. I think if we were to go back to them and give them instructions that there's a 5-0 unanimous feeling on the council that the number of 200 is too high, so that they're out of that paradigm of let's not make any changes. Their paradigm is let's not make any changes. And I think that's there's a logic to that. What you're saying, which I agree with, is in the real world, that's not fair. If we were to go back to them and say, okay, we want you to come up with a number below 200 that you can justify, I think that's a very different question to ask them. That's what I was going to suggest.
Well, I'd like to respond to that. Okay. I'd like to respond because when you read the memo, there's two reasons why they said it shouldn't change. One is they don't want to get into campaign strategies, and two, we shouldn't change the rules in mid-race. There is no mid-race for a post-primary. We are in the primary. The rules were changed significantly last week. The two reasons they gave, you know, and they shouldn't be involved in campaign strategies. On the other hand, what I was trying to do is to figure out this is going to recur at some point in the future as long as we have voter-owned elections. And I hope we have them for a long time to come. What I was trying to do is there a formula that could be used to determine, because each time between a primary and a general election for a special election can be different. Like for this, we could have chosen July or September. There's got to be some way to figure out what's a reasonable amount of money to put into a general election that allows the voter-owned candidate to have the same level playing field as a non-voter-owned candidate. And that is a discussion worth having.
No, I agree. I just think that you came up with one of probably two or three. And there's probably two or three logical formulas that one would fall to. I mean, I'm not going to.
So what are the others?
Well, the other would be that you say.
Timing of spending.
That you say you assign a percentage of the spending for expenses that occur every month, and you knock all those off for every month it's short. You might knock off some amount percentage for how close you were to the last election to get to your point, Randy. And then I think you allocate more than just. I just don't think any reasonable look at how campaigns spend can conclude that a 1 month campaign, which is, and I'm just making a point, only needs a third of what a 3 month campaign spends, because you spend all your money in the last month. So you've got to look at what a reasonable campaign is going to spend in the last month. It should be more like what is the campaign going to spend in the last 8 weeks of it, of a 24 campaign. And then I think you should get some deduction for your point that you've just advertised a lot.
Exactly.
Name ID.
Yeah.
But that's a different kind of thing.
I'm open to that.
And I don't know what number that gets you. I'm frankly, I want to be really clear about this. And I appreciate it. We're friends that we can debate this in this way. It's, you know, this is democracy. It's great. And I appreciate your points. And I wish
Thank
I would
you.
Have articulated to you what I understood. The
Thank
ordinance
you.
To
I, it means a lot. Thank you.
But I am not going to suggest a number for all the obvious reasons, and I am not going to say under no circumstances will I vote on this. If it's a 2-2 deal, I may need to. This has to be decided. But my preference would be to abstain, and frankly, I think anybody who's made an endorsement in this race ought to abstain.
So can I just try to summarize?
I think the three who haven't voted.
I'll talk to you more about that because I could be open to that.
So that would leave us three. Okay.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to clarify the kinds of.
It's actually not a bad suggestion.
The kinds of things we would like it sounds like everyone's okay with having the Elections Commission look at this.
Well, with the caveat of the issue, the concerns that we've raised. Yeah.
I'd like to respond at some point.
I will. What we want to look at them is not just spending sort of per rata for the entire time period each day. Divided by the time period of each election period, but also the points that Commissioner Stinn raised in terms of sort of the timing of the spending. Are there any other specific issues that should be part of their discussion as they wrestle with this?
You mean the timing, like the fixed
you ramp
cost?
Up, well, you ramp up your spending at the end because that's when all the advertising has to be paid for. And I think that's a legitimate point to struggle with.
I think there's a much... And I think this is in some part what they're trying to avoid doing. I think they probably, if you're going to get into a much lower number, which means you're much, much more likely to be into, you know, substantial matching funds issue, And I think then there probably needs to be substantially enhanced reporting requirements on the private funded candidate, should that be the situation. Because under the current situation, it's not as tight for the obvious reason that you're not really into matching money till really late in the game. But, you know, if somebody were, for example, to be at 66 under your proposal and receive 100 in the last day, it would be over.
Right.
And I mean, anybody who thinks that can't happen should look at my race.
Yeah. I agree.
So do you think we can, trying to keep the conversation looking forward and constructive, do you think we can do this?
I think the commission would be happy to do that. They tried to respond in some way in the meeting, and they simply didn't have the time. They recognized how complex, and they wanted to make sure they didn't bring something forward that made the situation worse. So essentially, they repeated what their earlier memo to council was, which was, this is complicated. Let's not change the rules because there could be unintended consequences. So
here you had to adopt rules last Wednesday for a special election. That was inherently a change.
Okay. So.
Okay. I don't necessarily, the rules that the candidates got into with a special election were all in place and have been in place for 3 years. So there were no surprises in terms of what those rules were and what they entailed. They've been on the city books for that period
of
time.
Not for a special election.
Not, but there was no surprises in terms of what those rules were. The $200,000 has been
there. Obviously there is.
Well, and let me, okay. If I could really defend myself a little bit, I'd appreciate it, because I got a clear direction, I thought, from council, and I got a clear direction from the Citizen Campaign Commission that it's dangerous to change the rules in midstream.
Right.
And that what we thought was that meant let's stick with what we've got if it works for this special election. The vacancy happened earlier enough that candidates could, and one did, qualify. And to that extent, it was a workable system for this special election. So that was the impression I got, and I thought you were very eloquent in the dangers of that it's a lose-lose situation if you start changing the rules because someone's right. going to be unhappy, that it undermines the credibility of the election if we start changing rules and it accidentally benefits one candidate or another.
You will concede that that was specific to the suggestion that was being made that we allow candidates who are getting signature for one seat to transfer to another seat.
Right.
That's what I was talking about.
And I understand.
And a special election by itself, I understood, required us to develop rules, which is thus why you brought an ordinance last week.
You
explained it to me, and you and I had a conversation on the phone about it. You neglected to point, you pointed out a lot of things, but you didn't point out this particular aspect.
So, let me finish.
Please.
There is a mechanism that used to be in place with council where I could actually bring things and talk about them with the executives before they came on the agenda. And it was just a routine communications tool. It was called the execs.
Right.
We're not invited anymore. So we don't have the opportunity to talk about these things in advance and say, does anyone have any questions? So I essentially have to go around to each of you to brief you on what I'm bringing to council, and it's hard to get in on your calendars. So to the degree that this is an issue that I would have been happy to sit down with any of you at any time if you had any questions, I assumed that everyone understood what the rules were for the system as it was operating, and that by applying them to this one, they would understand what that meant. I apologize sincerely for not communicating that. I will take responsibility for that.
It was clearly a misunderstanding. So that's I'm happy that we're having this discussion about taking a breath and having a further discussion. I think Commissioner Sten's suggestions are entirely reasonable, and I'm happy to support them.
So,
Dan.
Well, I just unlike a lot of issues where we have to look to what the framers of the Constitution had in mind or something. The framers are sitting right up here, the framers of this. So I am tempted to just say, let's pick a number that's reasonable in my estimation, or our estimation, about what it takes to run, a decent citywide campaign in 5 weeks. And I think that number is higher than 66,000. And I'm also sensitive to the issues of, maybe 200,000 is overwhelming for a non-qualifying candidate to keep up with. But I'm perfectly comfortable with having the commission take a look at it, given the discussion we've had today. You know, I was taken aback by one sentence here in this email, and that was that from the campaign commission chair that, you know, that this is, can be a lesson now. The candidates who choose not to run with public funds may now be realizing that there may be an advantage in spending one's time reaching out to voters rather than to wealthy contributors. I mean, to me, that's a pejorative statement. And, you know, I've raised this issue in the past. I think the commission certainly has a bent where most of them, you know, are big proponents of voter-owned elections. But we also want a system that is fair to those who choose not to participate. And so I think the instruction going to them is, you know, you've got to rise above your biases. And I think they did a good job on the independent expenditure issue. But like I said, I just found that one sentence to be a little bit, took me back a little bit.
Okay, I'll convey that to them.
So do we send this, what do we do with this, Mayor?
Well, go ahead.
Procedurally, what you need to do is vote on the mayor's objection. And if you sustain his objection, if three or more of you vote in favor of it, the effect is that the prior ordinance is repealed. And then you can direct Gary to do whatever it pleases you to do.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Mayor, knowing the faces and not knowing the Roberts Rules order, I do believe there may be some public testimony here. I don't know if you're taking it or if I don't know if you do on this.
Well, I think we're going to actually establish a public process for this. So did we have a sign-up sheet for this?
No, we had considered this as having a first reading already, but if, you know, council wished to take public testimony, I'm sure they could, correct, Harry?
Sure.
I would prefer to vote on this, and then I think the direction from the council is to send it back to the campaign committee with some very specific instruction.
Is there anyone who wants to testify? All right, we've taken... Oh, yes. I'm fine with...
Please come forward.
My name is Jeff Malachowski. I live in Northeast Portland. Been there for about 25 years. I actually didn't intend to testify. I came to watch and listen. My trade, I'm a nonprofit consultant. I have worked in the field of campaign finance reform around the country for 15 or 20 years, monitoring and helping campaigns all over the country, including here in Portland. I was also the founder of a national institute, the only national institute that studies campaign finance at a state level, nonpartisan, nonprofit. Throughout the country. It's sort of the equivalent of the Federal Elections Commission, but for states and municipalities, which of course have very different laws. So it's from that perspective that I just wanted to make a couple of comments. You know, I think that the voter-owned election system in Portland, I mean, people have different opinions of it. Some are for it, some are against it, some things it has strengths, some things it has weaknesses. I think that makes complete sense. People in Portland have different sides on the election at stake here, and I think that that makes sense. But I think that, you know, one thing that Portland is or should be united around is the degree to which we value participation in a committed and vigorous approach to experimentation in ways to increase democracy, to promote participation in our elections, to be an innovator in public policy. We think about it. We take it seriously. We invest effort into it. Sometimes it works well, sometimes it doesn't. And I think that the discussion that we just had and the direction that this discussion is moving exemplifies the best of that kind of a mindset, to take seriously our commitment to experiment, to take seriously our commitment to weigh the pros and cons, to look for ways to do things, and then deliberately move forward. I was concerned with this proposal that we didn't really have the data to determine an appropriate method for allocating costs on a shorter versus a longer election. We just don't know what it is. You know, there's a simple way of per voter allocation. Well, in a special election, you need to contact the same number of voters. Why should we drop so far down? But we've already heard some of the arguments. Why? Well, there's fixed costs and moving costs. There's costs that spread out across the course of an election. A summer election is even harder to get people's attention than a winter one. there's sort of a lot to think about. And it felt as if we were scrambling to address a system that, in fact, was a good example of our effort to be innovative and entrepreneurial, and we were going to scramble the entire discussion. Now I think stepping back to provide time for data and deliberation, it just makes a lot of sense. It makes sense for the reform. It makes sense for the commitment to give Portland voters well-reasoned choices, candidates' choices, as well as choices to the voters. And I think it will give us the chance to think it through, have the data, and have a set of arguments that we could defend. So I'm quite proud and commend you all for this direction.
Very thoughtful comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So do we need a motion or do we just vote? Please call the vote.
Adams.
Well, I want to be really clear that I'm assuming that the process that the Election Commission is going to take will start with an objective statement of the issue, that it will take public testimony in a formalized way, giving each person a required amount of time to say whatever they want to say, that there will be minutes for us to review, and that out of the commission will come a motion and a vote, so that there is some formality to this. These are really important issues, and again, I have a concern that this commission is operating in a informal manner inappropriately, and I actually think that this email is an example of that. So having stated those concerns and outlined my hope for what will be an objective process about setting an amount less than 200 but more than the 60,000, I vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Stan.
Aye.
Potter.
I would also like to ask that we have some timelines associated with this, because I don't want it to run up against the end of the primary before some recommendations are made. So I don't know what's a reasonable amount of time, but I certainly would expect that we would have sufficient time to discuss it, get public input, and take a vote well in advance of the primary itself. Aye.
Mayor?
Yes.
Could I ask the council's indulgence to take up the issue of just recognizing the Forest Park Conservancy? We've had Michelle Bassard in the audience since 9:30 this morning, and it's a relatively brief item. It's a 4/5 item, though, so I
need a motion to suspend the rules and hear a 4/5 item.
So moved.
Second.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Carla has to read the item. It's 340-1.
340-1. Acknowledge the transition of Friends of Forest Park to Forest Park Conservancy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Forest Park, as we all know, is one of the gems in our park system here in the city of Portland. And it's heavily used, and over the years, it's become frayed around the edges. We've been fortunate all this time to have a group called Friends of Forest Park who has helped the City Parks and Recreation Bureau in maintaining it, in acquiring additional acreage, and just enhancing the public experience at Forest Park. However, to ensure Forest Park future, a new model is needed, and neither the Portland Parks nor the Friends of Forest Park alone can do it all that must be done for Forest Park. We must take this partnership to the next phase, and that is the Forest Park Conservancy. Great cities that have great parks, and great parks have great conservancies. And I want to welcome Michelle Bassard and Dave McAllister. Michelle is the executive director of the Forest Park Conservancy. Dave McAllister is the head of our City Nature Division.
Is there a way to we still have a number of other issues,
sure,
to vote on.
This will be very brief.
Very brief.
Okay.
Very brief.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, Dave McAllister, City Nature Manager. And I just want to reiterate, Mr. Saltzman, he's exactly correct. Forest Park is the gem of our park system. It's a large, complex ecosystem representing over 5,200 acres. It has a mature Douglas fir forest. Remnants of that forest, up to 300 years old, exist there. It represents the city's legacy and its commitment to future residents. And I include in those residents about 120 species of birds and 62 species of mammals. So, as great as it is, it does have a myriad of management issues, and they include invasive species and wildlife, wildfire management issues, and we have challenges around our recreational use and education, environmental education opportunities. So our challenge into the future is to have Portlanders to continue to love Forest Park, but not love it to death. And as with all of our natural sites, parks cannot manage them adequately without partnerships from our volunteers and our friends groups. The Friends of Forest Park stand out as an outstanding example of that partnership. Portland Parks and City Nature is greatly appreciative of the efforts to date and look forward to the expanded partnership role with the Forest Park Conservancy. Together, we can continue to steward this invaluable resource in a manner that will continue to bring pride to the city. And one final thought. Michelle is a new executive director of the Forest Park Conservancy, a.k.a. Friends of Forest Park. And the development of this new model and approach has taken over about a year to complete. And so I did want to take a moment to a tip of the hat to Gail Snyder, who recently resigned as executive director. Michelle's taken his place. And Gail was instrumental in this, and she's been a great cooperative with Parks, and I just want to acknowledge her for her efforts to date.
Thanks. Michelle, take it away.
Perfect. I, too, acknowledge Gail. To step into her shoes has been an honor, just a real honor. Forest Park is a place valued for its own sake as an expression of our most deeply held aspirations for community and conservation, for opportunity and prosperity. It is a place that has invited us to renew our relationship with nature, whether lingering on its edges or plunging deep within to find solace, recreational challenge, and opportunity. And for all those years, the Friends of Forest Park, very ably led by Gail Snyder, has been the park's strongest protector and advocate. But in 2008, in honor of Forest Park's 60th anniversary, September of 08 to be specific, Friends of Forest Park is ushering in a new and momentous chapter in the park's history by transitioning to the Forest Park Conservancy. And I thank every one of the commissioners and the mayor for supporting this transition. And in the spirit of accountability and transparency, much of which has been the subject of your conversations today, I want to make some assurances to you and to Portland Parks, who is our strongest partner. The Conservancy will be dedicated to the continued preservation, enhancement, and sustainability of Forest Park, and will cultivate leadership and work collaboratively with Portland Parks and Recreation and other stakeholders to preserve and protect this asset. It will manage the business of the Conservancy in a way that is sustainable for the benefit of the park users, our city, and all of our partners. It will increase public awareness and appreciation of the park and foster partnerships and opportunities for rewarding community engagement in stewardship programs. And finally, the Forest Park Conservancy will continue to serve as the most passionate advocate and champion for Forest Park and its everlasting recreational, educational, contemplative, ecological, and economic values. And that is my promise to you. I don't know what all the gift policies are, but we do have little wristbands. They're about 25 cents each that say the Forest Park Conservancy, and I hope I can give one to each of you.
Well, what will happen?
Celebration.
Those old baseball hats that say Friends of Forest Park.
We have some of those, and we are going to auction them off on eBay to earn money to restore the trails out there and keep our crews employed.
Okay. Are there any legal or structural changes as a result of changing the name, or is it strictly just changing the name?
Technically, no. We will be changing the name. We are going to continue to be a membership organization, which we think is really important for the continuing ownership and buy-in. But no, you won't see any drastic new legal change. No. What you will see is a drastically different organization, much higher profile and much more aggressive on developing the resources to maintain this incredible asset. Good. Yeah. So.
Thank you.
And if you could just almost shoot these.
Give those to, yeah. Could you give them to Carla, please?
I'd be happy to.
You said aggressive. You meant aggressive. Yeah.
That's what we need, weapons.
Okay. Was there a sign-up sheet on this?
There was. No one signed up.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams.
Welcome aboard. Good work. Aye.
Leonard.
And yes, welcome, Michelle, on board. I hope the Parks embraces the Forest Park Conservancy Group as a true partner and doesn't view them as competing or as anything but a partner that helps improve what is a asset that I don't think any other city, as I understand, enjoys in the United States, but this huge forested area. So I'm asking Parks just, and this goes back from a conversation I had a long time ago, so maybe this isn't an issue anymore, is there any concerns from the staff with outside groups like the Forest Park Conservancy? Please embrace them. Please take advantage of them.
Dave, no.
Please exploit them, if you will, for their highest and best use. So you have a new director on board. Michelle, thank you for your work and your focus, and I appreciate it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to welcome the Forest Park Conservancy, its new executive director, and I appreciate mentioning Gail Snyder. We owe her a lot, too. And even going further back, people like John Sherman, who I think were instrumental in the formation of the Friends of Forest Park. So Michelle is inheriting a rich legacy, and the City of Portland for Parks and Recreation sincerely appreciates all the help you give us in preserving Forest Park. Aye.
Stan.
Great. Aye.
Potter.
Look forward to the new and improved Forest Park Conservancy. Aye. Thanks, folks. Please read item 336.
Accept report, bicycle safety, bike boxes, and alternatives.
Mr. Adams.
If I could have the group come forward. We're going to make this as quick as possible, but in order for us to comply with state and federal regulations and consistency, we need to have a short hearing and council consideration and hopefully approval of this report. Portland bicyclists are being killed and injured by right turns by automobiles. These are tragedies that we can avoid and reduce with improvements and changes in traffic and engineering in the right-of-way. On December 5th, Council authorized budget adjustments to pursue the bike safety reforms that you're going to hear very briefly about today. Next on the agenda is the policy work and protocol for enforcement clarification intended to improve the multimodal sharing of the right-of-way between bikes and automobiles, and we hope to have that back to Council in a matter of weeks. So without further ado, Rob.
Good afternoon, Council. I'm Rob Birchfield, City Traffic Engineer for the Office of Transportation. With me is Rich Newlands, Project Manager for this project, and I'll let you introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Mark Ginsburg. I'm the Chair of the City's Bicycle Advisory Committee.
Thanks for being here today, Mark. And Mark will offer testimony after our short presentation. In January, we provided Council with a progress report on this issue. If you remember, we had two fatalities involving bicyclists and right-turning crashes back in October, and that generated a lot of community concerns and the need for action. At that time, we gave you a progress report. One of the concepts that we alluded to in that progress report was an experimental treatment called the bike box. And that treatment is one of the things that we are recommending for application as a part of our final report. Since January, we've developed designs for intersections identified or proposed for treatment. And we've come up with final recommendations. There were 14 locations identified for study. One location has been dropped. That's the location of Northwest Lovejoy and 9th. That's dropped due to conflicts with the planned construction of the Eastside Streetcar Line. We've added in one additional location. That is 39th and Clinton, where we've had what I would describe as a rudimentary bike box that was installed a number of years ago. So our recommendation includes upgrading that location. There's two locations that were identified for study that we are saying still need some further consideration, further study. Those are Broadway and Williams, North Broadway and Williams, and North Interstate and Greeley. We have narrowed the alternatives for these locations down to two possible treatments, and I'd like to just briefly describe those for you. The treatment at Broadway and Williams could either be a bike box or it could be a bicycle signal that would separate the bike movement from the right-turning vehicles. That would be a relatively unique treatment. We have a couple locations in Portland where we have bike signals, but this would be a new application for this location. We need to do some additional traffic analysis for this alternative to determine if it is feasible from a traffic operations perspective. At the intersection of Interstate and Greeley, this is the location where one of the tragic fatalities occurred. We have two options. The site right now has a temporary closure for right turn movements that are coming from the north to the west. We could make that a permanent closure. That is probably the favored option at this point. We want to talk with more community members to make sure that that is an acceptable alternative before we move forward with it. The other alternative that we are considering is a colored bike lane with an active warning sign. Both of those devices would give the drivers better warning that there is a cyclist present and hopefully could avoid conflict with them. The proposed bike box would look in design like the design depicted in this slide. There are some key components I'll draw your attention to. As a motorist approaches, they'll see a wide white stop bar, and the area in front of it is the colored bike box area, which we're proposing to be green. The bike lane will be colored on the approach to the intersection and then continuing partway through the intersection in the conflict area for a short distance. There will be signing that helps enforce the requirements for drivers. There's a sign that tells the drivers they must stop here on red. There's a sign that will instruct drivers that they cannot make a right turn on red. And there's another sign that will tell drivers that they must yield to bicyclists when they're making a right turn. All these elements together basically are the treatment that we're recommending as the bike box treatment. Very quickly, I'm going to show you how a bike box would operate. The bike box enables cyclists to position themselves ahead of the stopped queue of vehicles in a location where they are visible.
They've done it.
Okay. Once they're in that position, this would occur when they arrive on a red light. When the light turns green, the cyclist would proceed.
They're fast. There we go.
And then the right turn would follow the cyclist. So if a cyclist approaches the intersection when there's a green light, the primary thing that we have as a part of this design that will benefit cyclists is this colored bike lane area that extends into the intersection area. That's to help draw the driver's attention to this area of conflict and make them aware of the potential conflict. We think that this design is a step forward in terms of the treatments that we have available to us to use and will help directly address some of the concerns that came about as a result of the two fatalities. That's all the presentation that we have prepared for you today. We'd be happy to answer any questions, and then Mark would like to provide testimony.
Questions?
Just one question. It's no right turn regardless of whether bicyclists are present.
Yes, that is one requirement for drivers that they probably will, notice, is that they're not allowed to turn red. Part of the reason for that is we don't want them to enter the area where cyclists need to have to queue. I would point out that most of these locations are busy central city intersections where there are limited opportunities to make a right turn on red when there's a lot of pedestrian and vehicle activity.
Further questions?
Mark?
Thank you, Mayor Potter, City Commissioners. Again, I'm Mark Ginsburg. I'm the chair of your Bicycle Advisory Committee. The shortest version I can give you is that the Bicycle Advisory Committee as a whole, and I personally support this. City staff came to us on two separate occasions, asked us if we approved of this in the theoretical sense, which we did, and then also came to us twice for technical input, which we gave them and which we believe has been incorporated. We respectfully suggest you adopt this. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for your service on the Bicycle Advisory Committee.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I need a motion to accept the report.
We have one person who signed up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For testimony. Teresa Teeter.
She's got her bike buttons on.
Teresa, if you could please keep it brief.
I know. I'll be fast. Thank you. Teresa Teeter, downtown bicyclist. New hat. I have some concerns because I looked through the whole thing and everything. Are there any city ordinance, like after, if we're in the bike box area and there's a car behind us and three cars back, rear ends all those cars and then they all hit us, what kind of traffic citations? And the other concern was people on cell phones. They're still lethal to us on bikes. I've had more battles with people when I'm in the far left lane over here going down the street and people trying to merge left and they're on their cell phone and not even seeing me because their arm's up like this. So do you have some cell phone considerations eventually somewhere with some of these bike lanes and stuff?
We were preempted by the state legislature from regulating the use of cell phones and automobiles. My understanding is under many cases when you rear end someone, it's the person who did the rear ending that's at fault.
Okay. And I was hoping in the beginning there might be some cameras on some of the signal lights observing how this all takes place and starts to see the battles. Because, you know, if you zoom over into the lane just as the light is still red, but you can see it's getting ready to go green and you got a car getting ready to floor it, my concern is there's going to be a battle to the death. So thank you.
This report, I need a motion to accept.
So move. So move.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Vote. Call the
Adams.
Vote.
Thanks to my great team at PDOT and Tom Miller, Shoshana Oppenheim, and Roland Schapowski in my office. Aye.
Leonard.
And it's unfortunate this comes at this late of an hour because this is really an excellent product born out of unfortunate tragedies, but the Commissioner Adams focused on resolving so that we didn't have repeat incidents or at least minimize. So I greatly appreciate as a person representing bicyclists and as a person who bicycles these recommendations and changes. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I think these changes are well chosen in terms of their initial location, and I hope that motorists and bicyclists will respect each other and protect the safety of one another, and these will help. Aye.
Stan.
Good job. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 337.
Grant residential solid waste recycling and compostables collection franchise in the city.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 338.
Accept a donation of $397,000 from the Portland Parks Foundation on behalf of an anonymous donor for the construction of a water feature in the park at South Park Block 5.
Please read 339. They're related.
Authorize a contract and provide payment for construction of Phase 2 of the South Park Block 5 project.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The first item is accepting a third major gift toward the development of South Park Block 5, $397,000. I want to thank again the Portland Parks Foundation and its executive director, Linda Lafayette, who secured the second donation from an anonymous donor, allowing us to move forward with the construction of the park as planned. The second item is the actual awarding of a contract to do the construction improvements at South Park Block 5.
Did we have folks sign up to testify on this matter?
We had a sign-up sheet, but no one signed up.
Okay. Is there anyone here who wishes to address this specific issue? Please read item 338 or call the vote on 338.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please call the vote on item 339.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 340.
Accept Parks System Development Charge Methodology Report for implementation and amend the applicable sections of code.
Second reading, call the vote.
Adams?
Well, Well, I didn't get a chance to participate in the conversation last time, so I just want to make a few remarks at the end. Portland is, people come from all over the world to sort of see the Portland experiment, and we're actually beyond experiment, the Portland way of doing things, and parks are an essential part of that. And I know this has been very controversial, but I'm supportive of them because of the response to community concerns that have been raised that removes the remodeling and focuses on new development. And I want to commend Commissioner Saltzman for his really good work and his team, Matt and everyone else. Aye.
Leonard.
And I have had concerns about this issue, but not ever, and I've tried to explain, not in the context of whether or not we need more resources for parks and not in the context of whether or not that the money will be spent wisely. I don't have those concerns. My concern has been the increasing cost of homeowners, of first-time home buyers buying homes in Portland. We have done a number of things to try to address that, including Commissioner Sten's latest initiative around homes around schools and neighborhoods, trying to do something to make it easier for kids, families with kids, to move in to neighborhoods. So, but I do on a close call think that this is an important initiative to move forward on, and we'll support it. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I'm pleased that we're at this point. I just want to, again, last week I recognized a lot of the Parks and Recreation staff, including Riley Whitcomb, for all their work on this. I forgot to mention my own staff person, Matt Grum, who has worked tirelessly on this as well. So I want to thank them for all their efforts, and this is a great step for the City of Portland. Aye.
Sten.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read item 340.
340. That was 340?
That was 340.
Yep. That was
340. That was
340.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and we took 341.
Okay. That's we're recessed until 2 p.m.
Were you on a debate team when you were in college?
He was. Right. I mean, geez. What am I going to do when he's gone? I'm going to get fat and out of shape. And, yeah. All right.